The McIlvaney Weekly Commentary, covering monetary, economic, and geopolitical news events. Now here are Kevin Orrick and David McIlvaney.
Welcome to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney. David, I know you've done triathlons before, or at least a triathlon. And one of the things that I was reading about triathletes, especially the ones at the optimal level, the peak level, what makes each triathlete different really isn't the length of time that they perform each of the maneuvers, but it's actually the transitions. How well they transition from biking or to swimming to running, whatever, that transition becomes very important, doesn't it?
You can lose a tremendous amount of time and thus value if you're considering your overall performance in those transitions if you miss them or if you're not doing them quite right. Anticipating them, thinking about them, knowing what lies ahead, and kind of living into them mentally before you get there is a really important piece. Kevin, do we wanted to spend some time today looking at not only exit strategies, but something of a review, something we've talked about several times in the past, our perspective triangle, putting that in context today in terms of where we're at and where we think we're going. But before we do, I think one of the things that's important to remember is that the context we're in right now is a context where trust is being slowly eroded and broken down. You look at the employment numbers this last week, and it's interesting. The Bureau of Labor Statistics counts part-time workers as anyone who works 1 hour or more. And
right.
You would generally think, well, you're full-time at 40 hours a week, or part-time, what, 15, 20, 30, 35 hours a week, just anything less than 40. Well, yeah, it's anything less than, including if you're only working 1 hour a week. Those numbers are going off the charts. The most recent addition to part-time labor was 331,000. And it's interesting. Same issues we've talked about before with the birth-death models. Artificially, 115,000 jobs were added. Those aren't real jobs. That's just a model which determines how many should be created.
But the reality, David, is that actually more jobs are being lost right now than gained.
Right. The issue at the end of the day is not one of numbers. It's one of consciousness.
Right.
And what is breaking in on people's consciousness is that they cannot trust the numbers. They cannot trust the people who are producing them. They cannot trust the system because the system has an agenda which is largely at odds with who they are and what they're trying to do, which is basically live their lives, take care of their families, and operate as individuals in that cycle of birth and death and everything in between.
Well, David, we've seen with unemployment numbers that we can't trust them at all. I mean, we find these revisions in the employment numbers when they say we actually have a gain 1 month, they'll turn around halfway through the month and revise it down. And they'll do that over and over and over again. I mean, this is a breaking of trust on a general level, political, economic. You know, we started with the financial, we moved to the economic, we're now in the political, we've talked about the geopolitical as well. Now, given this breakdown in trust, there's virtually no asset class out there right now that a person can actually lean on other than gold. We talked about that last week, but that brings us to this transition period. If people are not mentally preparing for whatever the next motion would be in the market, maybe it's a long-range type of transition that we're talking about, then they might be caught actually behind the curve at some point, wouldn't they?
Yeah, Kevin. I mean, I think of when you get out of the pool, when you're a triathlete and you're stepping out of the pool, it's not uncommon to have your shoes on the ground and open, waiting for you just to slide them in. You already know where you're going. You already know exactly what you're going to do, and it's going to take seconds for you to execute getting on that bike and going.
Well, and David, I know we've been using the term exit strategy or transition, but I think we could probably reframe that with the term reallocation strategy, because oftentimes there are assets that you really never fully exit. Gold would be a good example of that with the triangle that we've talked about in the past.
Well, and I think if you can, in the process of reallocating, create a series of legacy assets, and we'll discuss that a little bit today, then it can be very helpful in terms of general wealth strategies as well as estate planning. There are some concepts that we'll discuss today, Kevin, which I think put some of that in perspective in complement to the triangle.
Okay, Dave, then let's go ahead and move into the question, is an exit strategy actually necessary?
Kevin, as monetary policy measures and fiscal imbalances continue to set the stage for a price move in the metals, specifically gold and silver, rivaling only the 1970s and 80s, it's important to ask whether you have sufficient ownership of gold and silver today. But it's equally important to do what I would call an imaginative piece. Imaginative is how I would describe it, because we don't have the facts in front of us today that would inspire a move out of gold and silver.
I'll say. I mean, I can't imagine right now wanting to sell my gold, given the circumstances of the day.
Well, in fact, quite the opposite. I would prefer to add to metals positions at this point. The discussion worth entertaining today is in anticipation of tomorrow. It's a future decision to sell some quantity of precious metals in the future. Let's look at several of the assumptions that we have as we're kind of discussing owning gold and silver and a reallocation some point in the future.
So you would establish that gold and silver are still in a strong bull market.
That's a healthy assumption. We're still in a bull market.
Right.
I think it's also safe to assume that bull markets have a beginning.
Right.
And they have an ending. So
right.
We're somewhere in between. It has begun and it will end. The question is when.
Dave, I'm just thinking of some of the other bull markets that we've been through, you know, just in the last 20 years or so. We've seen the bubble with Greenspan in first the stock market. That had a beginning. It had a middle. It had an end. Reallocation was necessary. And then, of course, we saw a bubble in real estate right after that. People who saw that as a bubble were able to reallocate. Now we're in a bubble with the bond market and... Actually, some people are calling gold a bubble, but I mean that.
Let's specifically look at that. George Soros recently, on his way to the G20 meeting, had discussed gold as the ultimate bubble.
Right.
And this is just after he put on a position, in other words, bought a boatload of gold himself. And I think what he's implying is, and I know this to be the case, it will ultimately be the biggest bubble. Now, is it in a bubble phase today? Not by a long shot. Will it ultimately be? Yes, because every bull market does end the same way. And so we have an end of the bull market in metals, which is a future or horizon event. And that is one of our assumptions, is that it's out there in the future. And the question is, what can we do to anticipate that in terms of a reallocation? Because I'll be honest with you, the majority of people don't do the right thing at the right time.
Well, that takes us to investor psychology, which is typically clouded, isn't it, when it comes to the end of a bull market?
Yeah, objectivity goes out the door, and people begin to project into the future a recurring success based on their recent success, based on their recent experience or wins.
Right.
So I think as we look ahead, a transition is necessary from one asset class to another, and that'll be based on underlying economic fundamentals, when those underlying fundamentals change. Now, our effort here as a firm is to recognize the turning of the tide and to position our investors accordingly. To date, we haven't changed our method of allocation. We still like the metals and will for the time being. But again, there is this horizon event. There is this event in the future where a reallocation is going to be necessary.
Well, we have had a bull market in gold for 11 years, but it's still moderate compared to the way it would blow off ultimately at the end of the market.
And the question is often asked, in nominal terms, what do you think the price of gold is going to get to? And people
right.
like to play with those numbers, because what they automatically do is start calculating their personal gains. If it's the 3,000 number that you pick, then how much money have they made? If it's 5,000, I like that number even better. How
right.
much money have I made? What about 10, even 30, even 50,000 an ounce?
Yeah, basing it on the dollar is almost ludicrous, because we all know the dollar really has no value.
Well, and I think that's an important piece, is we do not assume a constant value in the dollar. We do assume at some point in the future a downgrade or a devaluation of the currency.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that this bull market trend, an appreciation in price in gold and silver, will continue for at least another 3 to 5 years, or until the Dow gold ratio reaches 2 to 1 or even 1 to 1.
And just a reminder.
First.
A reminder is you just divide the price of the Dow by gold to see what that ratio is.
Exactly. When you have a high number, you know that gold is undervalued and stocks are overvalued. When you end up with a low number, it's the exact opposite, where gold is too expensive and stocks, relatively speaking, are dirt cheap.
And you're saying 2 to 1 or 1 to 1 is a reasonable frame to start looking at possibly reallocating out of some gold.
Yeah, because honestly, you don't know what our monetary mandarins are doing with the currency, and it could be destroying it In fact, they have systematically since 1913, but they could be in very short order taking steps that destroy it on an even quicker pace. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's difficult to put a price target on it. To say $3,000-$5,000 an ounce, I think is a modest number, actually.
Yeah.
But what you assume when you accept a relative value versus a nominal value is that you have some objectivity, and price actually is a secondary consideration. Because when you sell an asset, again, what are you going to reallocate it to? And that relative value ends up being an invaluable tool in the reallocation process.
Well, another assumption that you've been looking towards with gold right now, or actually, you know, one of the principles that you're following, is that it's really playing a currency role right now as well as an investment role. So that has to be a big part of the decision, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think one of our underlying assumptions as we look at the gold market is that the global fiscal and monetary imbalances, emphasis on global, this is happening in various economies around the world, it will continue to favor gold as a currency alternative as a result of those imbalances. And, you know, for individual investors, it is a method of insurance against those system-driven imbalances. Individual investors have put money into gold both to safeguard personal wealth and to sort of shield themselves against the ravages of global competitive currency devaluation.
Well, and speaking of global competitive currency devaluation, or, you know, just countries having to keep up with each other as their currencies plummet, don't we see a devaluation in the dollar still coming?
Absolutely. I mean, so moving from the global to the national front, we face $70 trillion in current debts and future unfunded liabilities. The only way out is a massive devaluation of the currency, 50 to 75%. 75% is what FDR did back in the day. It will happen again. The question is to what degree. Is it 50%? Is it 75%? When you take that $70 trillion in current debts and unfunded liabilities, the problem is obvious. The solution is almost just as obvious. If you can cut that number in half, it's a doable number over the next 50 years.
Yep.
We can pay off $30 trillion over the next 50 years. We can't pay off 70. That's the reality. So how do you make 70 into 30 or 35? Devalue by 50%.
Well,
devalue your currency, and it's that much easier to pay.
And, you know, we've talked before, there are very few investments that you can be in during a devaluation that actually can give you a benefit. Gold is one of them, but gold isn't the only part of the perspective triangle. Why don't you restate that a little bit?
Well, again, the question, do I own a sufficient amount of gold relative to my dollar-denominated assets, mm-hmm. including cash? That's, I think, worth asking. In the context of, yes, an exit strategy is necessary, but have I, on the front end, done my homework and figured out what I should have allocated to the metals to begin with?
Okay, so we start with a simple model.
Yeah, and for us, simplicity is valued far more than complexity, where a vast number of assumptions are made, and the number of inputs going in mean that any change in variables may make it impossible to keep track of your investment portfolio in its infinite complexity. Yeah, and on this note, coincidentally, I was intrigued by last week's recommendation from former long-term capital management partner Jim Rickards. LTCM, as you remember, had this vast complexity modeled in their computers and was arbitraging various asset classes and in various exchanges around the world. And when the Russians devalued their debt, we saw massive hemorrhaging with that firm, and it needed to be bailed out.
Yeah, the complexity of that model did not allow for one of those unknown events. You know, Rick Buchstaber has also talked about this on our program. Once a surprise is entered into that complexity, then the whole model breaks apart.
Well, and so it's ironic that Jim, just this last week, has suggested to his clients to move out of equities.
Hmm.
Out, because he considers it a rigged game of computer-driven mindless trading, not a market used for the formation of capital.
This is a guy who would know. He's been there.
Well, exactly. He was one of the original participants in the rigged game, but when it was a novelty instead of commonplace. Now 70 to 80% of all trading comes from high-frequency trading and algorithm computer models. Kevin, that is not a market for capital formation, that is a market for penny clipping penny clipping so that on your billion trades per year, you make millions or hundreds of millions of dollars. But that is not capital formation.
Okay, he's out of stocks, but did he say anything about other investment classes?
Not last week, but over the last couple of years, he has suggested and has laid out a very plausible track for gold to move to between $4,000 and $11,000 an ounce.
Hmm.
Very interesting, and I'd love to invite him onto the program. He's seen a lot and done a lot on Wall Street, and his perspectives, I think, would be a good complement to more of our global and macro thematics.
All right, well, Dave, going back to the triangle then and the transition that we're trying to build in our client's mind ahead of time. I mean, talk about it.
Well, gold has been a game changer for an investor class that years ago freed themselves from the narrow thinking of Wall Street asset management firms. To me, the next game changer, huge game changer, will be moving to productive assets and out of metals when that same Wall Street crowd gives its full endorsement to gold and simultaneously is throwing in the towel on traditional investments in real estate, in bonds, in equities, when they just are wringing their hands or losing sleep at night because of the number of calls they're getting from clients who are upset about the bond market imploding, about the equities portfolios, which have underperformed now not only one decade, but perhaps two. Guess what they're going to do?
Well,
they're going to be moving into gold, and it'll be reminiscent, Kevin, of when Don was invited, my father was invited, to give lectures all across the country to Merrill Lynch brokers. This was in 1979, just as gold was near its zenith.
Yeah. What's amazing to me is they haven't done that yet, given the fact that look how much gold is up over, you know, the last 11 years.
Well, here are the facts. You have gold in U.S. dollar terms, which is up 400%. About 11 years. And if you look at it in other currencies, you'll see similar moves. It's a fact that the U.S. dollar has declined 80% in value against gold in that same time frame. It's a fact that the dollar and other currencies are down anywhere from 90 to 98% against gold. And if you're looking at the U.S. dollar, you know, this was a concerted effort starting in 1913 with the creation of the Federal Reserve and sort of this modest 1, 2, 3% inflation.
So almost 100% loss in the dollar since over the last century.
Well, and like we were talking about a minute ago, it doesn't take a one-night devaluation of the currency to pay off that $70 trillion in debt and future liabilities. If we have 4% inflation, you've cut your liability in half over a 16, 17-year time frame if you're doing your time value of money calculations. So 4% inflation takes away half the burden of our debts, and you know that's why the Federal Reserve is involved in their function. You know that's why they do what they do.
Okay, but let's rate it against the Dow Jones Industrial Average, because we've talked about the Dow-Gold ratio. I mean, how much has gold risen against the Dow?
Well, or to put it the other way, the Dow is down 80% against gold since 1999.
Hmm.
So, you know, again, in nominal terms, you look at the Dow and you say, I'm holding up just fine. We're holding nicely, right around 10,000, you know, plus minus 2, 3, 4% over the last decade. Nothing to write home about, but at least you haven't taken catastrophic losses. Well, listen, compared to gold, you have taken catastrophic loss. An 80% loss is not one that you quickly recover from.
Well, and one of the things, David, that we try to encourage our clients to do is not look at daily numbers. I mean, what is gold doing on a weekly, monthly, or annual basis? That's probably a more reasonable question to ask.
Well, this is interesting because in monthly terms, the closing high in dollars,
it just happened.
I mean, in light of these facts, and Kevin, for years now, we've been discussing on the weekly commentary, at the end of the day, remains our asset allocation of choice, gold. It's worth, though, coming back to the perspective triangle, coming back to the exit strategy, and the decision to maintain perhaps a permanent portfolio allocation to gold and silver. This, in essence, will carry your current ownership of the metals to future generations. And we'd like to see that happen as an asset with a zero-cost basis.
All right, well, you're going to have to explain a zero-cost basis because most people, anyone who's purchased gold, they have an idea of about how much they put into it.
Well, and to me, this is one of the more intriguing concepts. As you manage your wealth moving forward, current context and future, how do you as an investor develop an asset base, not just precious metals, but real estate, art, I mean, whatever it may be, that you have a zero-cost basis in.
Mm.
And if you owned your home outright, I mean, and this is just, it changes the complexion of ownership. If you owned your home outright and had an original investment basis of zero in it, would you think about its current market fluctuations? You know, so let's say it's up this year 10%, or next year down 25%. Are you losing any sleep when you realize you have zero money in it and it's fully paid for?
No, you're not thinking about losing it, at least your original principal.
Right. What about an equity portfolio? Would you fixate on the fluctuations in value in your equity portfolio if you had a zero-cost basis in it?
No.
And
no.
What if a zero-cost basis and 3, 4, 5% income from that portfolio a year, again, with a zero-cost basis, if it's up 5%, down 10% in a given year, and you've got zero money invested in it?
Well, David, we have clients who have that situation based on equities that were purchased by parents or even grandparents.
Right. The same with a gold portfolio that has a zero-cost basis. This is the key, Kevin. There's no magic here. All this is a different perspective on your overall portfolio and again, perhaps estate planning priorities. All you need is one of two variables to have a legacy asset, one with a zero-cost basis that becomes a permanent family or an intergenerational asset.
Okay.
One, if you have an asset that has high cash flow, and from that asset, you're able to recoup your original investment dollars. Take those original dollars to another application or investment allocation. So, again, if I've got a property that pays me 10% a year,
right.
How long does it take before I've fully paid for that property from the income, and I can now reallocate to another asset class?
Well, David, think of how many of our clients have that high cash flow income coming in from rental property that they may have owned for years or their family owned before that.
Well, oil prices are $70, $80 a barrel. And if you have a royalty interest in a well, then you know well what I'm talking about.
Right.
If you put in $50,000, $100,000, $500,000 into an oil drilling type of investment, and you've already gotten your original principal back, you still have an investment in oil and natural gas, or whatever it may be, but you've already recouped your original investment, and you still have some cash flow. Even if it diminishes over time, you have recouped your original investment, and you still have something riding on oil and natural gas. So one way is that cash flow helps you recoup your original investment. The second variable, is an increase in the value of an asset. So we're talking about capital gains, which allow you to sell off a certain percentage or a small percentage of what you own and maintain an allocation to that asset class when your original investment has already been recouped.
Why don't you illustrate that just a little bit?
Well, the asset class of our choice today, gold. An original $100,000 invested, let's assume $500 an ounce was the original purchase price.
Okay, so that'd be worth around $250,000 at this point.
So if you determined that the fundamentals of the gold market were changing for the worse...
Right, not yet.
But quite the opposite, in fact. Someday in the future, however, as it begins to change, you keep your $100,000 in gold. You sell off $150,000. You've gotten more than your original investment back, even after taxes, and you still have $100,000 in the precious metals market.
Just a reminder, you're listening to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary at McIlvaney.com, McIlvaney.com. And so that's where that zero cost basis comes in. You've already made it back. You've actually made more. And so now what you still own is pretty much free and clear.
Your gold position, regardless of market volatility, is now a legacy asset, one that should be kept intergenerationally without regard for price fluctuations. An added note here, we talked about this a minute ago. When you pick a dollar price for any asset that's being liquidated, it can be misleading. You know, let's say you're a longtime gold investor and you own ounces in and around $300 an ounce.
Right.
An even better time to purchase, right? Well, would you have sold at $1,000? Did it make the most sense to sell gold at $1,000? A handsome profit, why not take something off the table?
If that was the only thing you were looking at, you'd say, yeah, you'd pat yourself on the back, I tripled my money, I'm out of here.
But prices of any asset assume a constant value of the dollar, which, as we noted earlier, has been in an orchestrated decline since 1913,
right,
with the creation of the Fed, and in a market-directed decline over the past decade, which has distorted the dollar price for gold. For us, this distortion is expected to continue for another 3 to 5 years.
Or more.
What that means, Kevin, is that we put more emphasis on making a relative value judgment versus a nominal value judgment when you go to liquidate that asset.
So in other words, don't gauge things in how many worthless dollars you've earned, because it could just be that, a worthless dollar.
Yeah. A relative value of 2-to-1 or 1-to-1 comparing gold to the general equities market, the Dow, will be far more valuable and rewarding as we move forward. So I would not sell gold for any asset class at current relative numbers or nominal numbers, as it were. But as we look at historic benchmarks, and you have created a legacy asset from your gold holdings, at that point in the future, I would deploy the sold out gold positions more productively. So, Kevin, you know, for many of our clients, that looks very unique, very distinct, in light of, say, their personal or professional advantages. Let's say someone used to use heavy moving equipment in their business.
Right.
And they can now buy a different yellow metal. I'm thinking of Caterpillar equipment, for instance.
Okay, so you're actually talking about utilitarian types of uses for what the gold actually, you sell the gold and go to something like a Caterpillar tractor of some kind.
Yeah, if that was the business that you were in before and you can buy it at a deep nominal discount from a greatly improved asset base,
yeah,
I would call that leveraged purchasing power. The same dollars used to buy you one cat, and now they buy you five.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, and we have clients who are very, very adept at real estate. They just are out at this point. They're adept at it.
And that would entail moving from an inflated gold position into deflated multifamily or single family or commercial or industrial spaces. I mean, that's the idea, is moving from an inflated into a deflated class. And that is part and parcel of the perspective triangle.
Okay, David, we don't recommend them right now, but what about equities and bonds? I mean, there's a point for that, too.
Well, when I describe a hands-off investor, Kevin, what I mean is someone who's not operating a business or managing a property, who's, you know, in up to their elbows in the management process,
right,
but has an investment that has a good set of managers involved. That could be, well, let's just use Caterpillar again as an illustration. That's a company that sells equipment all around the world. And that may be a company that you want to own. Not necessarily today, but in the future. Illinois Tool Works, Procter & Gamble. I mean, names that do make sense to own. Kevin, what we're talking about is a hands-off investor who may return to equities or bonds with prices reflective of the 1932, 1949, 1982 lows. These were the best times to buy equities in the last 100 years. And interestingly, Kevin, those times have been highly correlated with the best times to sell gold, at least a few ounces anyway.
You know what's fascinating, David, on these discussions about relative values? You know, when we hear timing is everything, that can be fairly intimidating. If you're not watching the markets all the time, and people have screens all around them these days and microseconds to make decisions. In reality, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about long time frames. We're talking about trends and really just preparing ourselves for the next stage. But it's not something that happens in a moment. It's something that a person has time to actually evaluate at the time, like a Dow gold ratio of 2-to-1 or 1-to-1.
It has taken us the better part of 10 years to get there from a 43-to-1 ratio to now just under 10.
Right.
And it may take us another 3 or 4 or 5 years to get the rest of the way to a 1-to-1. It may take 6 months. I don't know. That's the part that we don't know. But in terms of relative value, we are working towards it.
Well, and the amazing thing, too, is the 40-to-1 down to 10-to-1 actually is about a tripling to a quadrupling in gold. But if you really do the math, take it from 10-to-1 down to 1-to-1 or 2-to-1, you're talking astronomical values.
That's right. Kevin, when I was talking about those sort of epic times to be coming into the equities and bond markets, 32, 49, 82, the emphasis is on times, because this is a recurring feature in the markets. And what's recurring is the extremes of greed and the extremes of fear. And we are now in the transitional fear stage at present. And I think with a fuller expression of fear and social anxiety still ahead of us.
So you're not saying that we're at the extreme of fear at all, by any regard.
Far
we're
from.
Actually sort of ending the greed stage at this point, are we not?
We're seeing final capitulation in the market. We're seeing, after a decade of zero returns, your mom and pop investors in mutual funds and IRAs and 401ks saying, this just doesn't even make sense. Mm-hmm. And I hit on this in last week's comments on our wealth management website, Kevin, where what we're seeing die is the cult of equities, and in its place is the cult of bonds, where people want a 2%, 5%, 7% quote-unquote guaranteed rate of return. And the thing is, there is no guarantee. It's just flat more attractive than the 0% they've had for the last decade. And Kevin, unfortunately, they're moving from the frying pan right into the fire.
Well, and you know, it reminds me of Will Rogers. Will Rogers was very wise when he said, you know, I don't care about the return on my principal, I just want the return of my principal. The problem is they're mistaking bonds as that return of principal, you know, with a small return on top. I think most people have forgotten just how badly bonds get burned when interest rates go up.
Well, let's talk about the perspective triangle, Kevin, because for anyone who's new to the program, this may be a new concept, but it's your basic asset allocation. If you draw a triangle, a couple inches on each side, you have on the right side of the triangle your cash or cash equivalents.
That's what you pay your bills with.
This is what we call the liquidity mandate. You have to have cash because you have to function in life, pay your bills, et cetera, et cetera. If opportunities come along, you're glad you had liquidity for the event. On the left-hand side of the triangle, you've got, according to our mandates, if you will, growth and income. This would be a combination of stocks and bonds, your traditional asset classes.
What like you would call productive assets.
Very productive, particularly if they're paying you a dividend or they're growing in some way from a capital gain perspective. A little bit riskier, a little bit more volatile, but again, it's a third of your assets. It's not 100% of your assets. That's why you have a good cash cushion, and it's also why you have the bottom of the perspective triangle, which is what we call the insurance mandate.
Okay.
We're not talking about an insurance product. What we're talking about is precious metals, an allocation to something that is non-correlated to the stock and bond market over a long period of time. And if you go back to the Summers-Barsky thesis, they illustrated the math behind how, if you go to the growth and income part of your perspective triangle, how in an environment of low to negative real rates of return, you want to own gold.
You want to have the gold on the base. And, and it's not ETFs that you're talking about. You're not talking about paper gold here. You're talking about physical ownership, either in your hand or stored somewhere else.
Paper gold can serve a function, particularly if it's on the growth and income side.
So the left side of the triangle.
But I would never substitute something like an ETF as an insurance policy, because you've got all kinds of counterparty risk, which, again, may be appropriate for a growth mandate, but is inappropriate for an insurance mandate. So it just depends on what you're asking your assets to do. What mandate are you giving them? What expectation do you have? Is it the liquidity mandate, like the cash on the right-hand side of the triangle? Is it the growth and income mandate on the left-hand side of the triangle? Or at the base of your investment perspective triangle, is it an insurance mandate where if there is currency losses, currency devaluation, inflation on the cash side, you are more than covered because that's what the insurance mandate does.
Right.
If there is, on the other hand, volatility or a period of low to negative real rates of return in the growth and investment side of the triangle, guess what? The insurance side is working and doing double duty. So again, you've got this balance. Here's the issue for us moving forward, Kevin. Let's say your insurance begins to do double duty because cash is devaluing and you're seeing losses in your equity and bond portfolios.
Right.
At some point, you've got far more than a third sitting in metals relative to the rest of your liquid asset base.
Which is really the case of the person who had a third in gold 10 years ago.
Sure.
And now, it's better than 50% of their portfolio.
And this is the point. At some point, you have to move back to your third position. Because otherwise, when you've moved beyond that one-third allocation to metals, you're giving it a new mandate.
Right.
Maybe it's a cash substitute. Maybe it's played for growth, but all you need is a third to cover the insurance mandate.
Right, but the growth mandate for the person who does have more than 50% or 60% in gold right now, according to our mandates, they would actually look at, say, that extra 20% over on the left side of the triangle, possibly being ready to sell that when we reach those ratios you're talking about, those times.
Exactly. So you get to a 2-to-1 ratio, you get to a 1-to-1 ratio, and you should be diligently reallocating.
Well, David, I'd just like to go back. I mean, the last 20 years, we have seen booms in other portions of this triangle. I mean, if you look from 1982 all the way to about 2000, the left side of the triangle, the equities, did fabulously. And if at various ratios our clients, which they did, would reallocate the, you know, into the other two categories on the triangle, they really didn't get hurt when, you know, we had the crash in March of 2000.
Yeah, 1999, Don was adamant in his newsletter that his subscribers get out of technology stocks and get out of equities in general,
right,
and reallocate. We've also been adamant in 2005 and 2006 that a bubble was brewing in real estate, and any real estate, excess real estate, particularly real estate that you had debt against and didn't own free and clear, should be liquidated.
And a number of people, a number of clients that had contacted us, actually did that before the drop in real estate.
And reallocated to metals and have done well, not only because they moved from an illiquid to a liquid asset, which the perspective triangle is all about, liquid assets primarily, that asset base grow. Kevin, this goes back to our underlying assumptions. Yes, gold and silver are in a bull market. Yes, bull markets begin and end. Yes, the end of the bull market in metals is a future or horizon event. Yes, investor psychology is such that you will predict tomorrow what just happened to you today. So if you're winning in the gold thing, you're going to assume that that's going to happen tomorrow, too. And you don't want to be told differently.
Right.
That's why we're having this conversation, Kevin, because it's not necessary to sell your gold today. Absolutely not necessary. If it hasn't penetrated deep into your brain, Kevin, you won't do the right thing at the right time.
Well, what we're talking about, David, is reason versus emotion. Now, it's proven that virtually every decision we make has some element of emotion in it. But if it's reasoned through ahead of time, then it's something that you can actually count on when you need it.
Well, Kevin, as we conclude today, I'll conclude how I did with the weekly comments on Friday of this last week. G.K. Chesterton's adage, you cannot reason someone out of something they didn't reason themselves into in the first place. Our assumption when someone buys gold is that they understand the fundamentals, why they own it. Why they own it as an insurance policy, not as a get-rich-quick scheme. And our assumption is that we can have a reasonable conversation with those people as time goes on. And if there is a point at which it makes sense to reallocate a portion of those gold holdings, they will do so. Why? Because they reasoned themselves in and they can reason themselves out. The people who will be most hurt in this bull market in gold and silver will be those who had no idea why they were buying, were playing some sort of a momentum trade, were in it for fun and profits, had no idea that there was economic fundamentals driving it, and now maybe driving it down. This future event needs to be anticipated. That's why we're having the conversation. Kevin, I think this is one of the defining differences, our company versus others out there in the universe of metals and even asset management, is that we do put a high priority on people's well-being, that they do well. And we see these future events, we know the psychology involved, the investor psychology involved, and we realize that it is difficult to wrap your minds in the context of a panic situation with gold spiking to unknown numbers. It's difficult. It will be difficult to do the right thing at the right time. But if we've reasoned ourselves into these positions, I think we can reason ourselves out adequately and not be at the end of G.K. Chesterton's critique of living mindlessly, whether that's our investments or anything else.
Well, you've been listening to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney. You can find us at McIlvaney.com. That's McIlvaney.com. Or call us at 800-525-9556.
This has been the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. The views expressed should not be considered to be a solicitation or a recommendation for your investment portfolio. You should consult a professional financial advisor to assess your suitability for risk and investment. Join us again next week for a new edition of the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary.